Woof, woof, woof.
Cock-a-doodle-doo!
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy? Is it working, Diana? Can you feel it?
I am
all the way down to my fiend bone. Absolutely, Lou. How are you this morning?
I am groovy. I am just peachy. The world is my oyster, but I used the wrong fork and was an outcast. By the way, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And a special announcement, extra special. We are about a week and a half away from the third annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Delton, it'll be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan. That's just outside Kalamazoo. And it will be August 7th through the 10th. And that's Friday through Monday morning. Come on out. There's going to be a good time. There's a lake out there, canoes, kayaks, beach, fishing. There's nice bass in there. I saw one of them when I was out swimming. But, yeah, a lot of neat stuff to do out there. And come on out. It's going to be a good time. You can register yourself and your family and friends at MIPLC.org. Round them up and bring them out. So you were out there last year, Randy.
I was
too Canadian if I said Kalamazoo. There's actually a place called Kalamazoo.
There is.
There is, yes.
I'd heard of it before, but I thought it was like from Dr. Seuss or something.
Sort of sounds that way, doesn't it? It's kind of.
I would
like
love
that.
To live in Kalamazoo. That sounds awesome.
It'll be stuff like that.
I don't know if it's all that exciting.
Osawatomie.
No, it's not a bad place.
Is that an Indian name?
Kalamazoo. It's one step away from the Liberty Fest.
Yeah, something like that.
It's very close.
But anyway,
maybe
Randy.
Bumper stickers.
Yeah, Randy, you were out there.
I was there last year. It was my first time. Of course, it was only your second time, right? Because this is
the third annual time this year. Yeah,
and it seems to be growing each year. The number I saw the picture, you know, from last year, which I was glad to be in, and there was like lots more people there, and maybe it'll be an even bigger picture this year.
Although it's looking like it will be.
You know, the thing that is nice about it, though, it's never going to get as big as Porkfest unless it expands the space, because it's a real nice space. The thing that was, I thought was nice about it, you just come, there's just a ton of places to set up your camp and that, all easily accessible to the main area where everybody was. Much smaller than Porkfest. I mean, there were way more than 100 people, but maybe less than 200. Is that probably right?
Something like that. I think it came out around maybe a little bit, maybe 150, maybe a little bit under. If you start counting day visitors, I'm not really sure how many there were, but there was quite a few people. It doesn't really matter how many people are there; it just matters the people that are there.
Well, that's something to be said about smaller venues too. It's like it's a lot more personal in some ways. So,
oh, very much so.
Get a chance to talk to people and get to know them better. And
yeah, the program, the thing that I enjoyed about it so much is that all the time there was usually some program going on, and somebody was talking about this theme or that theme that had to do with liberty, and but it's a small venue, so everybody was really gathered around at picnic tables under a big tent. And it was small enough to interact in that with the speakers. And although I really loved Porkfest when I was there, this has a totally different vibe that is a lot of fun and much more personal. Really neat. I'm going to be there if I possibly can. I'm trying to clear the decks right now. And if I do, and anyone who has a shorter drive than me has less excuse than me for not being there. And I've got about a 9-hour drive.
You and I have about the same amount of time to drive.
Isn't there a way for you to get down there without going around Chicago or not?
My choices are I can either head east across the UP, hit the Mackinac Bridge, which is where the Mitten meets the rabbit or the billy goat, depending upon how you look at it. Or I can drive down through Chicago. Chicago actually takes a little bit longer. Or I can drive down to, I believe it's Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and take the ferry across to Ludington, Michigan. But
in your car, I assume.
Yeah.
Oh, so you have just lots of ways to get there.
Ferries are kind of fun. You know, it's all about the journey, right?
Yeah, it's kind of pricey. I don't know that I would save a heck of a lot of time. So I'm going to drive down early, probably stay at a friend's house that's up in northern Mitten, and then I'll caravan down with them the next day.
Thursday,
that's the plan as of right now.
It starts Friday morning, but since you're a organizer, you show up the night before, huh?
Yeah, set up the big tent, make sure everything's in order, make sure there's plenty of firewood and everything. So
say, what was the thing I saw on Facebook about Adam Kokesh doing some function Liberty thing in Detroit and Battle Creek on the very same weekend?
I saw something about that. He's supposed to be in Battle Creek. I believe it's on Sunday the 10th. I also saw something about his non-supervised probation has been converted to supervised probation, so he's kind of like trapped in the Mordor on the Potomac area, so I don't really know.
Oh, well, I don't know him, but if I did, I would call him up and say, hey, you need to come on out to the Circle Pine Center. Everybody would, want them to come and let's hear what's going on. I would enjoy that.
I'm pretty sure email messages have been sent.
Oh, that's good, because it isn't that far. I mean, this is in central Michigan, right?
And it's more western.
More western. Well, I guess it's
better for me. Battle Creek is only 20 minutes away from Kalamazoo, something like that, if that much.
Well, it's not far then.
So I think these like get-togethers are a really awesome way to show that a bunch of anarchists can get together and just act like a normal community, right? Like you show how communities work in a way in these small groups. I mean, as soon as you get like, you know, even five or six people together, you've got a community. And like I noticed on Porkfest, there was an article write-up where it was a hit piece. And they tried to say, what would anarchy look like? You know, and they were talking about vending machines and stuff like that, just looking for something to disparage. But it's a great opportunity to show all the great things that come out of the communities that can be formed by people of, you know, similar ideas, right?
Mm-hmm. Which article was that?
I don't know. Michael sent me a link. I can't remember who published it.
Okay.
I'm sure you can put that into the description.
Yeah, I remember seeing an article, and it was in Maxim Online, I think it was. I guess a young lady went out to Porkfest and spent a few days, maybe the whole week there, I don't know, and she did a little write-up. And she went out to the newbie shoot, and it was her first time ever shooting a gun, and she was scared silly of it. But she did it, and she's like, well, I don't know how, you know, a bunch of people running around with guns is going to work out, but... You know, she went out there, she did it, and she found out that it wasn't quite as scary as she was indoctrinated to believe that it was. But I do want to share a couple more stories from Liberty Fest. You probably met this guy last year, Randy. His name was Dan. He showed up on, I believe it was on Saturday night. He was listening to Michael and Bill Buport on the Saturday afternoon show, and they had mentioned that Liberty Fest was going on, and they gave the... they gave the website and information on it, and this guy jumped on his motorcycle and rode from Chicago over to Kalamazoo. So he's not a long distance, just a couple hours away, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours, something like that. I don't know, but anyway, yeah. And he just got on his motorcycle and rode. I don't think that he brought a change of clothes, or I don't even know that he had a toothbrush in his back pocket. You know, I have no idea, but he just got on there because he was listening to Bill and Michael talking on the Saturday Freedom Fiends and said, I got to go check this out. He came out, he checked it out, and he will be back this year. I was just on a Google Hangout with him and a few other folks not too long ago, and I thought that was really neat. And
I remember the guy showing up. Yes, yes, that's great.
Yeah, he had a real nice motorcycle. And had I known that he had done that, I would have interviewed him on the Sunday Fiends live from the event, but I didn't even know. But and he was hanging out, checking it out and everything. And there's another guy, Old Arnie. He's our constitutional anarchist. He's involved with the Michigan Libertarian Party. Don't know why, but he is. And he came out to the first one. And the story about how he found out about it was really interesting. It's another example of, you know, just beforehand hearing about it. He was scrolling around on Facebook, and he sees these come back with a warrant door hangers from a cop block. Somebody had posted some pictures on there, and he says, well, how do I get one of those? And one of the organizers, Katie, said, well, you come out to this event, we're going to have a bunch of them. So he came out there. He didn't know anybody. Never heard of the group or anything like that. Came out, pitched his tent, and now we see him at least a few times a year. He's from the western side of the state, so he's from Kalamazoo area. But he'll come out to different events and everything when he can get out there, and I'm looking forward to seeing Old Arnie again.
So. I think he was there with his son, if I remember.
Yeah. You couldn't miss him. The little guy in his beard was bigger than he was.
Yes, and they had a big, big tent, if I remember right.
Yeah, they had that big old with the pole in the middle of it. I mean, it kind of looks a lot like a teepee. But
are you going to be bringing your Liberty Assault Kitchen this year?
Absolutely. You can't have Liberty Fest without the Assault Kitchen.
So there will be bacon then.
Lots of bacon,
of course.
So anybody that's anywhere nearby that can get out there, come on out, go to miplc.org. You can get registered still, and you can pay with Bitcoin. You can use Federal Reserve notes. If you have a big, giant family, then you can, there's a breeder's discount. And, I think the adult price is $55 for the entire weekend. That's camping. Come. That's the event.
I can't even stay at home. We got bacon.
Yeah. I can't even stay at home for $55 for a weekend. So we'll be right back after this trip to the market. Wames.
Yeah. You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Freedom Fiends, the show that needs a trigger warning.
Oh, yeah. Trigger warning. Hey, so I'm going to do a little bit more shameless self-promotion, and I'm going to tell another story about Liberty Fest. This past week, I was a guest on the Seeds of Liberty podcast. Check that out, theseedsofliberty.com. It's episode 20.
The seeds are the seeds?
The seeds.
Okay.
Yeah, check it out. It's episode 20. It's called Slaying Sacred Pauls, where I kind of ragged on Ron Paul, probably Rand Paul too. And the main theme was libertarian political activism is actually Keynesian in nature. But so shortly after that interview posted, I got a friend request from a gal in northern Indiana, and she had heard about Liberty Fest on the show, just talking about it a little bit, and I didn't even go into a lot of detail on it, but so I got a message today asking, what all's going to be going on, what it's going to be like, and everything else, and she and her husband and kids are thinking about coming out there. They haven't registered yet, but I'm sure I'll find out by tomorrow that they're registered and that they are going to come out. But a lot of activities. There's going to be presentations. There's going to be vendors serving food, selling food. Just all sorts of different things. But ultimately, the weekend is what you want to be. Go to the presentations. Don't go hang out at the lake. Don't hang out at the lake. Go on the trails. Don't go on the trails. But you're pretty much guaranteed to meet a lot of really neat people and have a good time. So two birds, one stone. And I'll have Michael put a link to that interview in the show notes. But check it out. Seeds of Liberty.
You sent a couple of really interesting links on email this morning. That I'd love to talk about the Metro Times and M Live. They had stories about renegade pothole fillers.
Yeah, the problem with being an anarchist is you have to explain these things that only a government can do, because there's no way that mere mortal humans could ever build or repair the roads and maintain the roads. That's just absolutely unheard of.
Lou, yes, Randy? I have a comment about. I went to this page. It's the Detroit Metro Times,
mm-hmm.
and their big headline at the top of it, this section is called Metro Times, and then it spells out one word, N-E-W-S-H-I-T-S. Now, but I'm sure it's pronounced News Hits. But
it is.
I don't know if that's really good, because the eye does weird things.
Well, it's different colors, so you might have to clean your glasses off a little bit, Grandpa Randy.
That's great.
I couldn't believe that they did that. It was kind of like the meme, the kid sex exchange. If you're aware of that one.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if we want to be.
No. Anyway. Kids exchange as opposed to kids exchange. Never mind. You were speaking about the potholes, which nobody likes potholes, right?
Right. I mean, Michigan is famous for potholes. There's not an interstate highway system here. There's an interstate pothole system here. So anyway, because only government can do this thing, the residents of Hamtramck, Michigan, which is technically a part of Detroit, I guess you would say, but a little bit separate, a bunch of regular mere mortal citizens have gotten together, and they're going to go and fill in all these darn potholes that are ruining people's tires and front end alignments and everything else. And they have a GoFundMe, I think it is. Yeah, it's on GoFundMe. It's called Hamtramck Gorilla Road Repair. Now, you would assume that fixing all these potholes would cost millions and millions of dollars, but they're looking for $5,000, and they are at $3,420 as of right now, and they've raised that from 110 people in 4 days' time, according to the GoFundMe site.
There's a couple interesting things about the story and how it got started, too. I mean, first of all, there was road work that was supposed to be done by the city, but it was conglomerated with other cities or something. Everybody else was getting their road work done except for this one town.
Yeah.
Yeah? I read that right? And so they're all sitting around the pub talking about, damn, those potholes, right? And
who would fix the roads?
Yeah.
You're saying Hamtramck got rolled in the deal? Is that it?
Basically,
they were the only place not getting fixed.
Well, there was also something about an improper bidding process, because, you know, when government does stuff, they have to really complicate the living daylights out of it. And you can't just say, hey, let's get these roads fixed, and people show up and start fixing roads. I mean, that doesn't happen, because you have to bid it out to private companies and make sure that, you know, the city councilman's ne'er-do-well brother-in-law gets the job, because, you know, it's not like he can make a living on his own without, you know, government welfare like that. But anyway, we'll finish up when we come back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
I was contacted by the government there.
Yeah, what happened with that? What's up with that?
Well, I just got back in time. I don't know what happened. I was off for the whole break, and now I got on, and here we are. Didn't miss a lick. Nobody would even known that I had a
You're busy filling potholes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I didn't even know until I heard the... I didn't even know that you were gone until I heard the fiend phone. But anyway, yeah. So thanks for filling those potholes for us, Randy.
I was glad to.
As well as Hamtramck and their Gorilla Road Crew, also in the failed state project of Michigan, in the People's Republic of Ann Arbor. And this is from, when was this? A year or so ago, something like that. But anyway, in the People's Republic of Ann Arbor, city residents got fed up with driving on pothole-ridden streets and everything else, and a local guy decided that he was going to go do it himself, and he did the patch job and everything else. And the article in MLive talks about Ann Arbor officials asked residents not to patch potholes on their own.
Yeah, they're all like, we have a hotline for that.
Yeah, they have a hotline for it, and it's 734-99-HOLES, so give them a call. And let them know how you feel about them not taking care of the potholes. But anyway,
the story about how they decided to get together and fix them in the the smaller place. I can't remember how to say that.
Hamtramck.
So fluently, Hamtramck.
Yeah.
But so you picture how this goes down, right? And mm-hmm. within that group, they're all just kind of hanging out as equal citizens, and one of them takes the lead, and somebody else had knowledge, right? Knowledge about how to fill potholes and what kind of materials to use. And so they formed a crew, right? Mm-hmm. And in that crew, there would have been sort of a hierarchy of who is organizing it and assigning tasks and so on, right? So I kind of see it as like it's a small bit of anarchy, but as we were talking about last time the three of us were together, there's some anarchists who want to reject hierarchies in all forms, not just statism. And it kind of asks the question, are hierarchies a natural state for people to group together in, right? When they get together in groups to accomplish something, is a hierarchy a natural thing? Or is it something that's a social construct that eventually leads to doom, right?
You mean it leads to government?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that this comes from the left, pretty much.
And, yes, it does.
And the type of anarchism that came out of the early late 19th and early 20th century that completely rejects any kind of hierarchy, which include a rejection of wage labor and any situation of, like, they believe everybody should either own their own business or there should be cooperatives, unless, of course, you're a commie, and then they think the state should own the businesses. But
or if you're an ANCOM, you don't have a state, but everybody acts like the state because then it's owned by, it is a cooperative owned by everybody.
Well, I personally think that hierarchies are natural, that if you try to have a society without one, it's a utopian social justice warrior-y kind of thing that implies that all people are absolutely equal, right? They can have equal outcomes, not just equal opportunities. And it's setting aside that some people are really good at some things and some people, are good at others, and it's going to cause some people just shine and they have talents. It's not that they have the talent and that they may end up in a position of esteem. I think it's what they do with that that matters.
Well, it's not just that some people are obvious leaders and ought to be in a position of telling other people what to do. I mean, sure, there are talents in that, but this can be a completely voluntary thing. It's the old thing about lumberjacks. Do they want to get together and organize a business and go up and chop down trees and then try and sell them as a cooperative? Or are they just going to hire themselves out to some guy who has the money, the means to pay them right now for their work and then wait 6 months until he gets his money? And they don't want to wait 6 months. They want to be a wage worker. They want to work for wages, and there's no other way about it. I mean, there are many people, I don't know if it'd be most people in this world, but certainly a lot of people that have no desire to own part of the business or be involved in the business in any way except to
or take
do their
the risk.
Job.
Take,
well, it
oh,
does
the
come
risk,
with responsibility, and some people just don't like the responsibility.
They don't, well, some people don't have a mental makeup that they want to do that. They say, my life is simple and happy. I'll go in, I'll do my 8 hours, I'll take my paycheck and go home. I don't really care about this job except as a means to support me in the things that I do care about in my life. And I can really respect that, you know, very much. I understand where people are coming from. And I think that the demonization of the idea of hierarchies of any kind in society is a real problem, because there are lots of people who accept hierarchy voluntarily, and they should be allowed to do that. I mean, you're going to have hierarchies at work. You're going to have hierarchies, you know, at play and that. Somebody may be the team captain. You're going to have, if you belong to a church, that church may have a hierarchy, and they don't put a gun to anyone's head. They don't put a gun to anyone's head to make them belong. They don't put a gun to anyone's head to make them pay the tax. They call it the tithe, and it's completely voluntary. And as long as you have people that want to do those things, I think it would be highly immoral to try and stop them.
I'm going to invoke one of the...
Oh, it comes down to the leader and what they do with the power that's given to them. And that's like, you know, so many people have seen this, that somebody starts out in a position really good-natured, and then they get kind of corrupted by power, right?
That's why it needs to be voluntary.
I'm going to jump in here. I don't usually invoke any of the fondling fathers, but I'm going to go with Thomas Jefferson on this. He wrote about the natural aristocracy, and that is where people rise up to positions, not necessarily governmental, but leadership positions. And they do so based upon their accomplishment and their virtue. Now, when you're looking at leadership, it could be somebody who is knowledgeable on a subject, as you guys were talking about with the lumberjacks. Or, for example, if the Freedom Fiends were setting up their own little ANCAPistan and we wanted to come up with a legal system for us, for ourselves, we might turn to Randy because he has knowledge of legal systems. He knows, you know, how not to do it because he worked for government for a long time. But because he has that knowledge, and because he is somebody that is respected and trusted, he is somebody that could say, well, you know, let me make some suggestions here. This is what I think. And this is why I think this, because, you know, it was tried a different way, you know, the government way, and it did not work at all. But what did work was when things switched over to this. So by having somebody with knowledge and respectability, you have actual leadership. Now, nothing burns me more than hearing somebody refer to politicians as leaders. They're not leaders, they're politicians. You don't need a bunch of people to vote to tell you who your leaders are. You know who they are just by talking to them, by listening to them, by being around them.
I've thought that so many times, that, like, of all the politicians that are out there, just about everybody knows somebody. Joe Blow down the street, we all know somebody who's more trustworthy, who's extremely intelligent, who we would trust more to make decisions on our behalf than the politicians who actually so-called represent us.
Well, the problem that we get into is that nobody who wants that job is worthy to have it there. If you want it, that's the first instant disqualification. If you had somebody that you really thought would do good on this or that task, they probably should be reluctant, or you should, I would suspect them immediately. If you want to rule, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, and I'll just do the full Tolkien quote, and it's, my personal opinions lean more and more toward anarchy. The most improper role of men, even saints, is the bossing of other men. Not one in a million is fit for the task, least of all those that seek the opportunity.
So one in a million, or what? Not one in a million is fit
not
for
one,
the task.
Not one in a million.
That's the first filter. The second filter is that, and if they want the job, they're not fit either.
Right.
And I think that he's too kind in that. I don't know if one in a million is fit, but...
Well, you have to remember that was probably during the World War II era that he wrote that, and the population was a fraction of what it is today.
Well, I was part of an elected executive in a film union, and I wasn't too keen on it, you know, from a political point of view, but it really was like a microcosm of the bigger political scene. And one of the things that excited me was that the guy running for president, we got him to do it. He really didn't want to. He didn't want the power. And that's one of the things I always believed was that, you know, people who want the power are the people you shouldn't be electing. So I thought that we were going to come up with a really great executive, but this guy, and he really didn't want the job, as soon as he got a taste of that power, completely transformed. And so that's where checks and balances come in.
So there. You're saying that he put on the Ring of Power and he turned into Smeagol?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's Lord exactly of the Rings right. is real, man. It was the transformation was complete, and it was quick. It didn't even take that long for it to happen.
It probably takes about... They don't even have to wait until they take the oath of office. By election night, once the results are in, the first thing on their mind, and the one thing on their mind, is re-election. That's it.
Well, they get people calling them as soon as they have the job. They get people calling them and offering them stuff in return for favors, and you get a sense of power that you can gain a lot of favor, and I guess just the feeding of the ego that all these people want to talk to you and want something from you. Yeah. In the smaller terms, politicians,
you really,
I'm sure,
you really
to
want to buy into the system once you get your nose in it. You just really want it's. It has to be just almost impossible to resist that. Ron Paul may be the only politician, the only one that I can think of that mostly did that all of his years in Washington, D.C. I can't think of anyone else who did that and put the finger up to the system all that time.
I'm going to slay a sacred Paul again. And
come on, be nice.
I am being nice. He's my favorite status. He's my all-time favorite government
mine
dog.
Too. Okay,
but
go ahead.
But here's the thing. He never really had any real power.
No.
Right? And he was never president. He was never a senator. About the most power that he had was being chairman of the banking committee, which means he can get away with a little bit of stuff, but he never had any real power. So what would have happened had he put that ring on? Would he have gone from an Autobot to a Decepticon?
In a heartbeat.
Decepticons, the ultimate name for the enemy, the evil people.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Oh yeah, Freedom Fiends.
Some liberty. Yeah. So, Lou, you have to go and mention Decepticons right before the break. Oh, my gosh. I was asking a friend about Transformers because I was looking at work by the director. Anyways, cut a long story start. I'm just like, what is the Transformer, you know, scenario? Are they good guys and bad guys? And he goes, yeah, the good guys are Autobots. And the bad guys, they're called Decepticons. And as soon as that came out of his mouth, I just started laughing. And then he realized how stupid it was. Like, Decepticons, you've taken like two terrible things and put them all into together to characterize the enemy, right?
Now, the con, deception, I get that. The con in Decepticon, is that like the con in a neocon?
No, I thought like a con artist. Right?
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's like the neocon. I don't know.
I'm not a hardcore Transformers fan. I've seen one and two. I didn't see three. I saw the one with Mark Wahlberg, and that's a couple hours I'm going to want back when I'm on my deathbed. But, yeah, I think it has to do with the con artist. So. Yeah.
But, like, these guys got no chance. They, most villains, they have some redeeming quality somewhere in a story, right?
Yeah, but these are just straight-up evil. I mean, they're not like Darth Vader, who used to be a good guy.
Yeah, there's no chance of even a positive backstory, you know? I kind of think that's, like, anarchy right now. That's what anarchy faces. They are the Decepticons of the political world, that when people hear anarchy, they just think, no redeeming qualities, right?
But the truth is, we are the Autobots.
Yeah, well, you know what? I was listening to a video by somebody who was assessing, I don't know, the phrase comes out, oh, but he's an anarchist, so, you know, and just started laughing. And that's really...
So it depends on who's doing the characterizations.
Yeah. I mean, I think every group does it, so... You know, especially in the political world, some of the stuff doesn't translate in Canada. So, you know, liberal, right? In the States, it carries like all of this. That's all you have to say. Just they're liberal, right?
But lefty socialist.
In Canada, we have a liberal party that's actually kind of like a middle party. They're not the left and they're not the right. The liberals are right in the middle. And in the UK, they use like, well, on Spiked Online, they use the term liberal a lot just to talk about like freedoms in the Magna Carta, right? So classic liberalism.
And who's to the left of the liberals in Canada?
The NDP, New Democrat Party.
Oh, New Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the major socialist party. So yeah, the term liberal really threw me for a while. It was like, well, they're describing the NDP. Why do they keep saying liberal? But, you know, terms and names for groups like that can have that effect where, and especially the way they say it, right? So it's like anarchists or, you know, Decepticons. And it says it all. You don't even have to get into a discussion anymore, right? But I can see the confusion in a way because the anarchist... ideas have its entire own spectrum, which is what brought up our earlier discussion about hierarchies and such, is that within anarchy, you've got socialist anarchy and you've got, like, you know, the extreme right, like, you know, ANCAPs, or I don't know, is ANCAP extreme right in anarchy, or is there something?
I guess theoretically it would. I was really surprised to find that the libertarianism is a... it does have a left and right, because you have the left libertarians, which are socialists, but they're voluntary socialists. They have this idea that people are going to say, hey, you know, we want to be socialists, and we think this is the best way to do it, and we're going to do it. And they really don't bust on other people's shops. I mean, they'll call names, but they're not going to come around with guns and force ANCAPs to become socialists.
Unless, of course, they're left libertarians that will force ANCAPs to become socialists. Say the people that like to push the the basic guaranteed income. Now, I can understand people who think that corporations will go away in a stateless society, but how do they think that there's going to be a basic income guarantee without the state? I mean, it's got coercion written all over it.
True. I don't think that would be the left libertarians, though. I think that would be the so-called anarcho-communists, who are just communists. But anyway, second hour coming up. and we'll be dropping mad scientists and tasing you with liberty. Worms. Wings.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that tickle the fiend bone of liberty. I'm Randy England, and co-host Diana Davison and Lou Fiend have hacked into the CIA's subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobe. So lose the tinfoil hats and know that you are free. Hi, Diana. Hi, Lou. You there?
I'm here. I just grooving out to that music. It has like Decepticon kind of feel to it, like we're potentially evil.
It does. There is it. It was in a rather minor mode, wasn't it?
It's awesome.
Well, before the we went to the break, and of course, it seemed like that was last hour. Oh, it was last hour. I think you were talking about or mentioned the way that people, how they conceptualize good and evil in their, you know, ideologies, how they characterize people. And we were talking about the Decepticons and how that, would be. And go ahead.
I think frameworks are really important for people. Like, it gives you a sense of stability and security. And even if it's not good, like, people will stay in a bad marriage just because they know it and they're afraid of the unknown, right? That that this framework is really important for people, and they don't really know where to put anarchy on that framework. But it's actually, they have a left and right spectrum within anarchy. It's an entirely different system. So I think it's really exciting in a way that people who are leery of the unknown could actually, you know, see that they can fit somewhere on the spectrum in a different system. It might open their minds a little bit to the idea of rethinking systems and rethinking frameworks. Yeah.
Well, everybody, we all have a love-hate relationship with the unknown. You know, you're afraid of what might happen, but then there's that sense of adventure too, and so you want to do stuff and go places you haven't been before. And that's kind of neat about that. You talk about the spectrum of anarchy, and I'm not sure if I get that completely, because I kind of see it, depending on what you put on the ends, I guess, if you call it a spectrum. You know, I'm thinking on one end is statelessness, and what's on the other end, or have I got that? You're not talking about it in that way.
No, within anarchy, they're looking at things like we were talking about earlier, like a rejection of all hierarchy. So they're looking at the equal distribution of all social goods, right? So coming up with systems in which the community is willfully dedicated to caring for each other within the community.
Would these be voluntary systems?
So, creating a voluntary socialist system. And then you've got people who are very much into private property and merit-based, you know, behaviors, where you only get what you put in, right? And the socialist side of it is saying, well, you know, not everybody can do everything, and so we have to, you know, not just take care of them, but they are still of the mind that resources should be doled out equally, redistributed, let's say, right? I think it's a difference of redistribution of goods versus you, the goods that you have are the goods you've earned. Right?
Well, let me jump in here for a second. If they're already in a socialist system, there's not a redistribution of goods because that's already been taken care of. What they're talking about is an equal distribution of goods. So, you know, if their little collective farm produces X number of bushels of corn or something like that, then everybody gets the same amount.
Well, when you redistribute, though, you have the problem of you put everything in the pot, and then you give everybody their share, and then one guy says, well, I'm going to sell my share and do something with the money. Now he's got nothing again. I mean, what is there to do except just start over and throw everything in the pot again?
Randy, stop making sense. Stop injecting reality into socialism and communism.
I came across a really interesting story about a tribe, and I was looking up social stratification on, I guess it was the Wikipedia site, and anthropologists had an argument that, well, the starting argument is that all societies have hierarchies of some sort, right? And that everybody agrees. And then in this one section of anthropology, they say some anthropologists don't agree. They found tribes that if somebody went out and had a really successful hunt, they would actually be ridiculed by the tribe in order to make sure that their ego and their pride didn't go too high. So the guy who was studying them, he went out and bought a cow and brought it into the tribe, and he was ridiculed for like 2 weeks. They mocked him and they laughed at him and you know, made fun of him in every way they could. And he didn't understand until he worked out, oh, it's because they want to make sure I don't get egotistical over my ability to provide a cow for them. Right?
Well, that would only work until you realize that they weren't really mocking you. They were just sort of reminding you. Sort of like the Roman conqueror who had to have the slaves stand behind him in the chariot, whispering into his ear, remember, you're only a man, as they came in the ticker tape parade around them.
Well, actually, you'll see that ridicule in modern society also, because you'll have the kids that they get the D's and C's will tease the A students for being eggheads.
That's right.
They say
100, 100, 100, 100, 100. Yeah.
They will tease people for using proper language and speaking correctly.
Well, I think you're right. It can get kind of annoying when you get to grammar policing.
So, but the people who were doing this in this primitive society, were they really doing it because they felt inferior, or was it really a social, like I said, a reminder?
It was that, a social check and balance.
Not to get a big head. Yes, but was it sincere? Did they truly have contempt for people that did things?
No, not at all.
Okay. So it was just a reminder rather than a real slap.
Let me ask a question. Now, this is an egalitarian village type thing, right? To where they're sharing everything and basically they have a socialism going on, right?
Very or high on the egalitarian.
Okay. All right. So if a person goes out and has a particularly successful hunt and brings back a lot of food and shares it with everybody else, then why in the happy Halloween are they ridiculing him for his success?
So that he wouldn't get too prideful.
Okay. But they're going to eat that food, right? Or are they going to say, oh, no, you were too successful, and because you're proud, we're going to let this go to waste. We're going to starve to death to keep you from being too proud. Am I reading too much into this? Am I getting a little bit moronic here?
Because I don't know.
It sounds like the ridicule is rather moronic.
Well, I'm not recommending it.
It seems that way. I think this could only happen in a society that had no refrigeration. Because if you killed a bear and drug them back to the camp, you and your family probably couldn't eat the whole bear anyway, so everybody would share it. But I think refrigeration would change that. I mean, if you had a freezer,
it's interesting
that
you say that
bear,
actually.
Well, actually, smoking and preserving trumps refrigeration in many cases.
Well, yes, but we're many of us are past that now, and we preserve by throwing it in the freezer.
Well, we're talking about people in primitive tribes and everything else, and they don't have the freezer, and they're still at the smoking it and other preservation methods.
If they're that far, there's plenty of, I know plenty of North American, you know, Native American societies that did not have that. They would eat, stuff themselves to the gills when they killed the bear, and then just leave the, and they'd go to bed and they'd get up and stuff themselves again and leave half the bear on the ground while they moved on to the next place. And they didn't even have that.
Well, obviously, they needed government to teach them how to preserve food.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I was reading in terms of like an anthropological or sociological investigation into the end of egalitarian systems, it was named surplus, it was one of the main problems. So that when surplus stopped being sacrificed to the gods and surplus became a commodity to be doled out, that kind of was the religious leaders in charge of it to start with, and then it transformed into political leaders, and that the control of the surplus became a major source of power, and that like refrigeration and stuff, the ability to accumulate surplus has added to the complexity and the movement away from egalitarian societies. Now, I'm not saying that's true. That's just like, that's a really great theory. Yeah.
Well, if you were a dictator or wanted to be a dictator, you would probably, if you could use religion to get power, you might want to do that. But once you got power, you might feel confined by the principles of the religion, and you might want to overthrow the god once you're finished with him.
And become the god.
Yes. It's going to get in your way at some point. The preacher on Sunday morning is going to, if he could somehow get everyone to follow him, at some point the principles that he started out espousing are going to start to chafe at him a bit and limit the power.
Yeah, he would kick God off the throne only to claim the throne for himself.
Yes, looking more ridiculous by the moment.
We're just such symbolic creatures, though. Like, this power can take so many different forms based on whatever we decide represents power, right? So it could be corn, it could be salt, it's gold, it's Bitcoin. We actually decide what has power, and then it becomes almost a religious thing, which is, I think, that's the way I see politics. It's a playing out of religious ideas and symbolic words and symbolic concepts and representations. I actually think that the head of state is the manifest God for a lot of people.
Well, that's for why the we religion of statism, that's practically definitional. Are we look at? I can't believe I saw it today. Donald Trump was polling at 25%. In a latest poll, over just way beyond any other Republican. Wow, I don't know where that's going, but my head hurts from that.
He has the appeal to the he's loud and obnoxious, and he's appealing to the angry base of the Republican Party. If you look at his ideas, particularly on border control, he is a blithering idiot on border control. And these people that are following him because they're angry about immigration of the past and everything else, they are even bigger idiots. If they get what they're wanting, they're going to get it good and hard, and they're going to hate every last second of it. But anyway, maybe we'll talk about that when we come back from this trip to the market. Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Wimes.
And a good comb over.
We shall overcome.
Or not so good.
We shall overcome.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com. FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Donald Trump's hair. It's a mystery.
It is.
It's a symbol. It's a symbol of power.
And the Freedom Fiends are back from the market. And Diana, I think you have you had the floor when we left.
Oh, well, I don't know. Didn't Donald you? Trump came up. And
I know Donald Trump.
I think that hair is a symbol of power, too. And that, that he's had such bad hair for so long and not changed it, not fixed it. That shows a lot of power, too, right?
And I saw a picture of... I don't know. It looked like a kind of a loose bale of hay on top of a car, and it says Donald Trump's toupee has arrived in town.
Oh my!
Yeah, he has really bad hair. So, but anyway,
he's got the money to fix it, right? And it's been a public joke for like a decade. Right? Is it like it's got to be at least 10 years?
3 decades, probably. I don't know.
You know what? Maybe he just has that hair when he goes out in public and he looks normal like when he's in private at home. So who knows? But anyway.
It kind of ties into the talk of symbols, though, right? So hair is actually, I think, a symbol of power. Women with long, lush hair and guys losing their hair, huge crisis, right? And we live in such a symbolic world where all these things carry much more weight than they appear to on the surface.
How about graying hair?
Graying hair?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean it can look kind of dapper or attractive depending on how it happens.
If you're a guy, it means you're distinguished. If you're a woman, it means you're old.
Yeah.
It's not quite fair, is it?
It depends on the way it happens, right? But I think the main thing is that it washes out your appearance. So in the same way that like super blonde hair, like almost white blonde hair can be really tricky for people because they're all washed out and stuff. But I don't know, appearances are a big part of not just, you know, our everyday relations, but it's a big part of hierarchy too. And people who get in positions of power, they do so because they have charisma, because they usually are attractive in some way. What's the ugliest president you've ever had?
I've never had a president. I've just had these guys that claim to be leaders that were forced upon me.
Lyndon Johnson?
Oh, Nixon. He was kind of sketchy looking.
Yes. Yes. He and Johnson, he had two really big noses, one right after the other there.
Two big noses?
Well, each one had one nose, and together they were president after the other, so I was two big noses, one after the other there.
Lincoln was kind of hideous looking.
Yes, and that's why he grew his beard, because a little girl wrote him a letter and said, grow a beard, you're so ugly.
It didn't help.
You've never had a president who's been, or we've never had a prime minister who's been unmarried.
Oh, in Canada, you're saying?
Yeah.
Because in the United States,
have you had one in the States? Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's been one guy who called himself the president of the U.S. that was a bachelor.
Who called himself the president?
Yeah.
But he wasn't really?
Well, I mean, that's the title that he had, but I don't think of him as a president.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Lou's just being an anarchist right there. That's all.
I'm being feisty. I'm being feeny.
Just be careful. Be careful that you don't mention the word "we" in the same sentence as the state.
Or I don't speak French.
Or but I will ask you if you have a mouse in your pocket. See.
But symbols play a big part in our, you know, in the way we feel safe or don't feel safe, and what we can relate to or not relate to, right? So we have, I think we're talking about people being comfortable in the current spectrum and seeing anarchy as being an extreme that's not even on their comfortable spectrum, whereas it's actually just a different framework for the same thing, right? But this, you know, I know I'm saying the same thing we've already covered, but I think it's really important because fear is so powerful, and when we feel uncomfortable or afraid of something, then we tend to try and draw up comfortable images, which are just symbols and things that make us feel safe, right?
Comforting lies. Well, safety or security is one of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, so.
Oh, and by the way, the unmarried so-called president was James Buchanan.
Oh, I'm not familiar with him. But I don't
think he's in good company with Beethoven and Jesus and some other people.
Never mind. Hey, I saw that movie. Beethoven. Jesus was married.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, if somebody could walk on water and turn water to wine and all this other stuff, a 33-year-old Jewish guy could be married.
Oh, stop it.
I'm sure if he'd have wanted, he could have got a girl, but I don't think he did. Hey, are we about to go to the market now?
You're headed to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
I love that Wampus Cat drop. I don't know who's putting that in there. Is that you, Randy? Are you doing that?
I am the Wampus Cat.
Yeah, but are you dropping in the rah, rah, rah sound? Who's doing that?
I said that.
It sounds like a cat and a dog fighting it out, and I keep wanting to know who won.
So, anyway, yeah, change. Yeah, you know what? Bad. Change is the one constant of human existence. People are so resistant to change, but it is the one thing that is always a certainty that things will be different in the very near future. So, why people are so resistant to it after all these years, I have absolutely no idea.
This is Furries, the Fiend Phone Unnecessary Random Reeducation Interruption Exigency System, or Furries.
Is this an emergency? Scrutinizer.
It is. Well, an emergency because I feel like it. I just interrupting to say, I'm using Fiend Phone over Windows 10. It works. My computer did that like hour and a half update tonight. And Fiend Phone works on Windows 10. And I wanted to prove it and have a record of it. So you're doing a great show. Keep it up, y'all. Thank you.
Ah, there you have it. Fiend Phone works on Windows 10. Breaking news. Here live on the Freedom Fiends tonight.
Yep. Later.
Luke, change. Michael, good night. I don't like change, but it's going to happen anyway, right?
Right. But perhaps.
I was thinking about, If I can bring up the short film that I watched, I gave you guys a link, but I'll describe it really quickly for the people listening. I think it gives us some really great discussion points for change and for symbology and so on. There's this short film, won an Oscar, called Balance. It was done in Germany, and it's got five figures who don't speak, and they're on a platform floating in space. And they all work in unison to make sure this platform doesn't tip. Everyone, if somebody takes a step, it will tilt and the others have to respond and balance it out. So they go to the edge because they're curious, just like we want to know what's in outer space, and they fish. One of them catches a box that turns out to be like a music box. And when this box joins the platform, their ability to work together starts to slowly transform. And so this, you get the impression that they've been living in a state of harmony and balance for a long time. But as soon as something comes that they can covet, then they start fighting over it. One would take a few steps to an edge and make the box slide towards him, and the rest have to go to the other side further away. And they all want to be close to this box. And at the end, all of them get slowly knocked off, well, actually dramatically knocked off near the end. And the final choice is that the one who gets the box doesn't get it, because he would rather kick off the final person left on the platform, leaving himself at one end of the square and the box at the other, never able to get near it, but not having to share it. And I think it says a lot about conceptions about what people are like, and the symbology of the platform representing society, and that it must stay in a state of balance, that it's like society is floating in outer space, and if you make one step the wrong way, everybody could fall off it.
Well, if the box had to change the whole dynamic, because as soon as the box came on and they had to go over, I just assumed that they would, if they continued cooperating, they could have worked it out so that the box ended up right at the midpoint with them standing around it. But apparently, what is it? You know, envy or whatever was motivating them. Everybody wanted it alone.
Well, maybe their box was the ring of power to them, mm-hmm. and they had to wear the ring to rule them all.
Yeah, well, their life seemed a little boring at the start, and this thing played music, and they seemed, it was just like the excitement of something new and something different, which was, you would think, like, you know, oh, change. They'd be like, oh, what is this box? Get it off of here. But the curiosity element, right? But yeah, mostly envy is what came about. That they started playing games, like, and you would think that if they worked together, they could have somehow got this thing to the middle slowly. But
oh, sure they could. They were expert at balancing that silly platform they were on. They knew exactly what to do before it had to be done. They could have figured that out but somehow they were super coordinated before the box came in, and then the box just changed everything and ended up killing all of them but one, right?
Yeah, the one left over who'd never be satisfied because he was stuck at the other end of the platform, the furthest point away from the box that he wanted in the first place. Yeah, but that says a lot about your ideas about human nature, as far as, are people innately good or are they innately evil? Are they potentially all good, but they become, you know, corrupted by the slightest bit of envy or jealousy? It asks a lot about your concept of humans, I think.
My personal belief is that human nature is cooperative, and humans are naturally good, with the exception of a few defects, you know, like serial killers and things like that. I think that a lot of it comes from human conditioning to believe certain things, you know, to actually be envious of other people, or to think that central planning is a good way to do things, because, you know, you were told in school that, hey, you need these wise overlords to tell you what's going on. Otherwise, you're going to wind up doing, you know, stupid stuff. You can't be trusted on your own. Now, I mean, granted, you can vote for these people and you can be trusted to do that, but you can't be trusted to actually run your own life and actually self-govern and self-regulate. You know, that's just crazy talk.
Well, it creates the feeling of that these individuals who are doing perfectly fine without anybody telling them what to do, you know, it gives you the feeling that they needed that person, in order to prevent them from succumbing, right? And destroying the entire reality of the square.
So what was this, a symbol of the fall of man or something? I'm not sure where they were going with it, you know, in the whole thing, but it looked like their society was perfect at the beginning of the video, and then it was completely ruined at the end.
Well, I think one of the core questions is whether or not you believe society is that unstable. Is it like a square floating in the middle of space, where kind of like the flat earth theory, right? You'll fall off the end. And I think a lot of people do see the world like that, and that's why they're so afraid of change.
But is it naturally unstable, or is it unstable because of conditioning?
Yeah, I think it's imaginarily unstable.
Because and this goes back to one of our first stories of the night, and talking about the folks in Hamtramck, Michigan, which is a little town inside Detroit. Their roads aren't getting paved, or the potholes aren't being fixed. And trust me, the roads around Detroit are absolutely positively horrible. I just got awful. But rather than just waiting around for government to get off its lazy butt and get it accomplished, you know, these people banded together and they got their own little GoFundMe project, looking for $5,000 to buy supplies for filling these potholes in, and they're stepping outside of the comfort zone.
Well, I think it was interesting with that, too, that they actually didn't know if they'd get arrested just for filling potholes on their street.
Well, actually,
but
over
they went ahead and did it anyways.
Over in England, there was a guy who privately repaired a nice stretch of road, and I believe that the government came out, destroyed the repairs that he made, and threatened to arrest him if he repaired it again. Or threatened to arrest anybody that repaired the road again. Because heaven forbid private people, you know, actually go out and step outside of their comfort zone and do something for themselves.
I think it's a really important part of the story, actually, that they had to secure some sort of approval from the government in order to fix their own street.
Yeah.
I think it's an extremely important part of the story.
You're really not free unless you have permission.
Yeah.
Lou, I thought it was kind of interesting that you said you thought people were basically good. And, you know, it seems to me that whether that is true or not depends on what you mean by basically good. Because if you're a libertarian, you're probably going to define that as basically being willing to leave other people alone and not do things to them that you wouldn't want them to do to yourself. Mm. And you're not going to put a whole lot higher demands on the definition of a good person, right?
Well, I guess the definition that I'm putting out there would be not harming others, not being violent, not being hateful for no reason whatsoever. You take small children, you put them in a sandbox, and you have, you know, all these different races of children, and they don't care. You know, they don't know the racial slurs or anything like that. They know sandbox, they know bucket, shovel, make a castle, things like that, and play with other kids. So the whole idea of different races really doesn't mean a whole lot to them. Also, if you look at small children, like let's say mommy and daddy are fighting or something like that, when they see the aggression or even the violence, they automatically start crying because it troubles them so much. So I don't really think that humans are born with violent attitudes or violent dispositions or racist dispositions. It's something that is learned.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I wonder about that. I mean, you could be right, but the definition
of course
of
I'm
not,
right.
Of
hello,
not good could be your typical statist view, who would not be happy at all with defining good as somebody that just leaves other people alone and doesn't hurt anybody. Their definition of good would be somebody who gets in everybody's business, the busybody. Is the supreme, you know, good person, because they know what's best for everybody else, and they're going to make sure that that happens, even if they have to form a government with guns to make it happen.
Well, actually,
Big definitional difference.
The definition of good for a status is somebody who leaves me alone but bothers everybody else and corrects everybody else's imperfections.
Yeah, they can't pull that off because they can't exempt themselves from the taxes. Well, sometimes.
Or the enforcement for it.
Sometimes they can.
In terms of deciding, you know, the goodness or badness of people, like, one of our problems right now is that you're not seeing people in their natural state because the people you're observing have already been conditioned into a system. So you really do have to go back to, like, to childhood and unadulterated childhood in order to get any sense at all of people's nature. And I think, like, there is a lot of seeing something and wanting it, right? And then the result of not getting the thing that you see.
It's called envy.
Yeah, and that manifests in a few different ways. But what people refer to as, like, evil or badness, it's all stuff that they've already learned, I think.
And we will be back after this trip to the market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Hey, I want to tell you a little bit about Hamtramck. You were having trouble pronouncing the name. It's a Polish name. It's Hamtramck, and it used to be referred to as Pole Town, and that's where the Polish immigrants had settled into in the Detroit area. They'd kind of had their own little enclave there, and it's really interesting now because you can go to the Zen Buddhist temple for yoga class, and as you're coming out, you can hear the Muslim call to prayer while walking to the Polish supermarket to get your kielbasas.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah, and I just ran out up here in Bear Saskatchewan, so I'm going to have to make a trip down there in the very near future and resupply because, like, you know, got to have, you know, fresh and smoked kielbasa and homemade pierogies and everything else. And there's this place I go to. They got the cute little Polish girls with the sweet little Polish accents. So yeah, it's fun. But
are you going to smoke them or put them in your freezer?
Well, I'll buy smoked and fresh. So the smoked is already smoked. But yeah, it's going to wind up going in the freezer because it's going to have to last me until next time I get down to the failed state project. So, but one last plug for Liberty Fest tonight. The third annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held August 7th through 10th at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan. That's right outside of Kalamazoo. If you can get out there, get on out there, jump on your motorcycle and ride out there. Don't even bring a toothbrush. Now, you know about it in advance, so bring a toothbrush, but anyway, yeah, come on out there, have a good old time. Adults are $55 for the weekend. That's camping as well as the event and everything, and, you know, all the stuff that goes along with it. So bag of groceries, $55, and a drive over to the Kalamazoo area. And it's a really good time. You'll meet a lot of really neat people, and you get a chance to see how Liberty works. If you've never been to one of these things before, I highly recommend it.
Hey, are there going to be any people, notable people that you know are going to be there? I know Will Coley's going to be there, isn't he?
I'm pretty sure he is.
Didn't Will feed everybody for a meal last year?
Yep.
Will's the Muslim for Liberty, or the redneck Muslim, I believe he calls himself.
Yeah.
And they had food at Pork Fest, and I think he has upped his game because the Pork Fest stuff that they were giving out was fantastic. One thing that was amazing, I think, when I came to that, I brought food. I thought I was supposed to either buy my food there or feed myself. And every time I turned around, people were trying to shove free food at me. I'm thinking if you showed up, you might pick up a couple meals in a day. People are so hospitable.
And we know they got bacon.
Oh my
lots
gosh.
Of bacon. There will be people vending food. Will probably be vending most of the time. And then last year, I think it was on Sunday evening, he gave away food. And he made up this duck egg stew that, oh my God, was absolutely to die for. Will, make sure, if you're listening, you should be listening, make sure that you make that duck egg stew, even if you only have to make like one serving for me. But as a matter of fact, I'm going to try and bring some duck eggs to make sure that he can do it. But I'm not going to be vending food this year, but what I will probably do is on Monday morning after everybody breaks down, I'll cook up a big old breakfast for everybody that's there. So if people want to contribute some potatoes, bacon, sausage, you know, stuff like that, and I'll cook it up. And for last year, I think I probably fed, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 people on Monday morning before we all took off.
That sounds great.
Great.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is.
Come up with a tofu version of bacon that's convincing, and then you will actually solve all the problems of the world.
And this starts on Thursday morning, which is
Friday morning.
Friday morning, the 7th, is that right?
That is correct.
During the day, the programs will kick off too with different topics and that sort of thing, and that'll run through Sunday, I guess.
Sunday night, yeah. There's going to be people doing presentations on different things. There will not be a live Freedom Fiends from the event, but there's going to be some guy with a podcast that'll be doing his show live on Sunday evening, I think. But yeah, it's going to be a good time. I mean, at the very least, you meet some really neat people and you'll have a blast.
And you get to be somewhere near Kalamazoo. That. Kalamazoo,
yeah.
Lou, the Dr. Zeus town of the United States.
Hope to see you there, Lou.
I hope Diana, to see you there, Randy.
And I hope to see you both back here soon.
Oh, and I believe Christian and Diana will be out there. The other
yeah,
Diana.
Yeah, Diana. More
the
more
laughing
fiends.
Kitty.
Any yeah, other fiends that we know of?
That's all I know of for certain. There's a couple other people, but I don't know if I can publish their names.
We'll just have a surprise then.
Well, whoever yep. you get to meet, it's always good just to meet in person, so you know.